Apologize for the delay. We were up in another committee, the five members that sit on this committee, which is the Senate Committee on Commerce, also make up the Judiciary Committee, and we had a bill that kept us, or a couple of bills that kept us until about 3:25, 3:30. And so I'm going to go ahead and call to order at this point the Committee on Commerce. We have a subcommittee to hear at this point because I'm missing three of my members. I need one more before we actually have a quorum to make to take any action. But we are in a position to take testimony at this point. So I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing for the subcommittee of the Committee of Commerce on Senate Bill 970. And I have, it looks like, possibly two people that would like to give testimony, Kathleen Joy and Renee Bryant. And we're going to have our learned counsel walk us through everything as everyone gets scheduled and seated. Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 970 removes the requirement to cover AmeriCorps participant under the unemployment insurance. We don't have there's no revenue impact, and we have not received a fiscal statement, or we haven't received anything from fiscal yet. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's see, what I'm going to do is, I guess, Kathleen, you're signed up first.
Right.
And, or should we start with Renee? I'm just wondering what would be the best.
Probably if I start, and then Renee is here to answer technical questions, as is our AmeriCorps program officer, Patricia Boland.
Okay, great. And Patricia, I'm going to go ahead and just write your name down for I won't forget it. And Kathleen, if you'll go ahead and get started.
Okay, for the record, Chair Prozanski, Vice Chair Beyer. My name is Kathleen Joy. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service. I appreciate the opportunity to represent the members of the Commission today as I speak in support of SB 970. The commission was created by Governor Roberts in 1994 to establish eligibility for the state of Oregon to receive AmeriCorps funding from the Corporation for National and Community Service. We came into statute in 2001. The commission is responsible for administering funds provided to the state for AmeriCorps programs which operate solely in Oregon. The purpose of this bill is to bring the Oregon Employment Department's current practice of excluding the AmeriCorps stipend when calculating unemployment benefits into statute. Moving from practice to law provides all AmeriCorps program sponsors in the state with secure knowledge that their very limited federal and local dollars will not be subject to future claims. A little background on AmeriCorps. AmeriCorps is an opportunity for dedicated citizens to give intensive service to meet community needs in education, the environment, public safety, homeland security, and other areas. AmeriCorps members learn new skills in the process of developing and implementing projects that address those needs. In exchange for their full-time year of service, most but not all AmeriCorps members receive a small living stipend. Upon completion of their term of service, all participants earn an education award that can be used to pay for college or to pay back qualified student loans. We currently have more than 450 AmeriCorps participants serving in Oregon. They're giving 1 year of full-time service doing things like tutoring children, coordinating volunteer programs, assisting victims of domestic violence, giving teen pregnancy prevention presentations, removing non-native species, performing trail and stream bank restorations, and accomplishing other goals to improve their communities. This issue arises from issues in the National Community Service Act, which created AmeriCorps as a program. In the document, the legal status of an AmeriCorps participant is defined in 42 U.S.C. Chapter 12, 51, 17b. It says, a participant shall not be considered to be an employee of the program in which the participant is enrolled. Thus, as a matter of employment law, the employer-employee relationship does not exist between the grantee-subgrantee program and the participant. However, in another section of the bill, Congress was quite explicit in stating that AmeriCorps funds, federal funds, could be used to pay for workers' compensation and FICA for AmeriCorps participants. The General Counsel for the Corporation for National and Community Service, the federal agency that funds us, issued an interpretation in March 1995, before the first AmeriCorps program really rolled out, that the specific provision relating to AmeriCorps compensation and FICA day taxing takes precedence over the general provision that participants are not employees. So what we see in that section is a potential for misinterpretation between tax law and employment law when considering the status of AmeriCorps participants. The General Counsel continued that no similar provision exists to authorize the use of grant funds to pay state unemployment contributions or reimbursement. Thus, they interpreted the National Community Service Act as providing that AmeriCorps participants are not employees of the programs, with the express statutory exception that they may be treated as such for workers' compensation purposes. And that opinion was later upheld by the Federal Department of Labor. Since the program's inception in Oregon in fall 1995, it's been the practice of the Oregon Employment Department to exclude the AmeriCorps stipend from consideration when calculating AmeriCorps benefits for all its participants. So we're hoping that there will be a passage of this bill, and we urge you to do so.
Great. Thank you very much. And Patricia, did you want to make any comments or statements?
No, I have no comments. I was just here for questions.
All right. And Renee, would you like to give us any positions that you may have on behalf of the Employment Division?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, the Employment Department doesn't take a formal position on this bill except to say that we could administer the provisions of it. The request for the bill, I believe, came about as a result of a couple of decisions that came out of the Employment Department in which the statutes were read together in a way in which the Employment Appeals Board ultimately determined that there was an employment relationship in one particular circumstance. The Employment Department heretofore had not read the federal law that way. We had not been applying the law in a way that covered these employees, these individuals, for purposes of unemployment insurance, nor were we taxing the businesses that employed them when they were providing these volunteer services. So this wouldn't impact us in a financial way. There's going to be no drain on the UI trust fund. There will be no tax experience ratings impacted because we're treating them as excluded currently. We had done so before that decision.
If I could just clarify, oh, Senator Byer, go ahead.
Oh, I don't know.
It sounds to me that basically we, under our interpretation here in the state, felt that they were excluded already. We had not been, requiring the unemployment. But apparently the decisions that have come out on the federal level kind of made this a little more cloudy as to what should or shouldn't be doing. And we're just wanting to make certain that our statutes provide for what has been the practice of the Employment Division, how they've treated these individuals.
Senator Brzezinski, that's correct, except that it was a state decision from the Employment Appeals Board that created the uncertainty. The individuals who are bringing the bill forward just want this statute to provide clarity for that purpose.
Okay, thank you. Senator Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill really kind of makes me mad, and that it's here, that it has to be here, but also, I mean, why is it the Employment Department has been treating these people who clearly have an employer-employee relationships and saying they're exempt?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Byer, our interpretation of federal law is that we have no choice in this case, and we are not treating them as not employees. When there is remuneration paid for services, there's an employment relationship. That is always true under federal law. However, federal law also allows for specific kinds of exclusions. What we exclude them from is coverage under the unemployment insurance system. So we're not saying for unemployment insurance purposes that there's not an employment relationship. We're simply saying that based on that, irrespective of that employment relationship, you're not going to be entitled to receive benefits based upon the monies you receive in this relationship as wages, and the employer's not going to be taxed on that amount. So an exclusion is a little bit different than saying there's not an employment relationship. In fact, this case arose because there was a separation from employment which needed to be adjudicated in order to determine whether or not a person could qualify for benefits. So there was a relationship, it just wasn't covered by purposes of unemployment insurance law.
I understand that, but my understanding is that the ALJ determined that there should have been coverage and that that person should have received unemployment insurance.
Senator Brzezinski and Vice Chair Beyer, that's correct. The ALJ did. The Employment Appeals Board did as well. It's just a different interpretation of what the requirement of the federal law is. The federal law says a participant shall not be considered to be an employee of the program in which the participant is enrolled. And we believed at the Employment Department that that preempted any state law. It's a federal program.
So then why do we need this bill?
We thought that we needed this bill in order to ensure that the AmeriCorps program sponsors, current and in the future, have a clear understanding and a clear written record that allows them not to have to expend time and money in fighting appeals or work against in some way that was costing staff time for them should another opinion get appealed in the employment division. We also believe quite strongly that the federal law is correct, that this is not an employer-employee relationship. These are volunteers who are committing to a long-term period of service. If we look at what the Fair Labor Standards Act says about what volunteers are allowed in remuneration, living stipends are clearly allowed. I believe that Congress was quite clear in writing what was very contentious legislation because this came into a partisan Congress from a partisan president in clarifying the differences between an AmeriCorps participant and a regular volunteer. And that's why we're very careful to use the word participant in the language, and that's why the federal law uses the word participant.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that explanation, but we have, obviously, we have state law and we have federal law, and we interpret our state laws. And if we have a state court, right, I mean, or not court in this case, but adjudication process that has said that these people are to be treated as employees, and I'm curious to know why it is the Employment Department feels they don't need to. I can, as an employer, I cannot, you know, have four or five people working here and then say, well, I need another job done, but I can't afford any more employees, so I'm going to ask this person over here to become a volunteer, and I'm going to give them a little bit of money for volunteering. I'm going to give them workers' comp, and I'm going to give them FICA coverage, but he is not an employee. He's a volunteer. I can't do that as an employer. Why are we allowing government to do that? That's what makes me mad, Mr. Chair. This is when we have one rule for the private sector and another rule for the government sector in the exact same area. It's just blatantly unfair. I understand the spirit of the law. I understand the spirit of the AmeriCorps. I support it. It's a good program. But why is our employment department treating the government sector different than they're treating the private sector?
Chair Brzezinski and Senator Beyer, thank you very much for the question. I appreciate it. We don't feel that we're treating anyone differently. There are, I believe, in the current statute, 35 current exclusions from unemployment insurance, which this would be number 36.
Let me interrupt. Exactly. This would be number 6. It's not there now.
Mr. Chair and Senator Beyer, that's correct. It would not be there now in the law, in the state law. But with respect to the Employment Department treating individuals differently, the Employment Department didn't bring any of those exclusions to the legislature. Those were brought by, for instance, there's an exclusion for food demonstrators in law.
But you're not getting to my question.
I beg your pardon. I'm sorry.
My question is this. Why is it after you've had an opinion from an adjudication process inside your own division that says these are employees and they need to be covered, and there's one person got coverage, why is it you have not then gone to the rest of the volunteers and wherever they're working and said all these people are now need to be covered until the law has changed? That's my question, because if I got caught once and I you know, you would go back to all my people that and look and say, anybody he's ever had as a volunteer, you got to pay back wages and penalties on them, wouldn't you?
Senator Brzezinski, Senator Beyer, that's correct.
So why haven't you done it here?
Senator Prezansky and Senator Beyer, our interpretation of the law differs than that of the administrative law judge in this case. Our interpretation of the law differs than that of the Employment Appeals Board. Those entities do not have a precedential impact on the decisions of the Employment Department.
Did you appeal their decisions?
We did not appeal their decisions. We had a discussion, in fact, with AmeriCorps. And with our Assistant Attorney General, and there was a cost-benefit analysis that we made and decided that we wouldn't appeal it.
Let me just break in just for a second, if I could. Can we come right back? That's what I just want to see if we can maybe reorient, focus for a moment on something else. Based on the decisions that were made, what discussions have you had, if any, with your legal counsel from DOJ? And I'd also like to know, in those discussions, was the rule that you mentioned to us, you brought forward, that is the federal rule, was those things contemplated and discussed as to why you haven't followed through, as Senator Beyer has asked?
Chair Prezansky, yes, we have had discussions with our legal counsel at the Department of Justice. We were told that we had a legally defensible position to take with respect to interpretation of the federal law, and that is as far as the discussion went at that time.
If I could just follow up, just I want to find out, were those points made to the administrative law judge or the Court of Appeals or the administrative appeal?
Chair Prezansky, the law was quoted in the decision of the Employment Appeals Board, and they quote that a participant shall not be considered to be an employee of the program in which the participant is enrolled. And then the next sentence says claimant was enrolled in the AmeriCorps program. Under the statute set forth above, claimant was not an employee of AmeriCorps. Those two statements seemed inconsistent.
That's in the opinion that we're talking about from the administrative law judge or from the appeals?
Chair Prezansky, that's correct.
Sorry, Senator Beyer, why don't you go ahead and if you have any other questions.
No, Mr. Chair, that's just my frustration in this area. And I know this is a public hearing, not a work session, and I know that you guys are just the messengers, and I'm shooting the messenger, and I apologize for that. But this is my frustration. I mean, because it is a politically correct, good organization, AmeriCorps. We all support what they do in volunteerism. Our government agencies are turning a blind eye when they were, if it was XYZ Corporation or Senator Whitsitt, you know, Inc. or Roger Beyer as a personal employee, there's no way if you got an ALJ opinion and then an opinion from the whatever your appeal board is, the employment, whatever it's called, if you had those two things, you'd be going after that employer and every other employer like them for back penalties and everything else. But because this place, it's AmeriCorps, they do good work, I mean, that is what makes me mad about it. I understand it. I'll support the bill. But I think it's just unbelievably inconsistent the way the system treats different entities. And that's my frustration that this bill is here today.
I appreciate your comments, and I guess I'm somewhat concerned and puzzled that we have a decision that's been handed down, and the way it's worded, it sounds to me that they're basically taking the position that you want us to be in, but they're saying we're out of compliance, or maybe I mistracked this. So let me ask Senator Whitsitt, do you have any questions at this point? What I'd ask you to do, I'm going to go ahead and first ask if there's anyone else who wanted to give testimony on Senate Bill 970. And if there's not, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be closing the public hearing on 970. We're not going to move the bill today. What I would ask for are copies of the opinions that have been referenced. The chair at this point is uncertain as to what the testimony has been as to and relying on those cases that have been cited. I personally like to review them before I move this into a work session. So if you could provide that information to our committee assistant, that way everyone will be able to have those. We'll be able to look at them, and then we can schedule it for this next week for a possible work session. So with that said, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 970. And I want to also... This one we're setting over, right? Everything else is still on.
Yes.
make a general announcement. For those that are here on Senate Bill 190-190, it is being set over. Apparently, there may be some conflict with the amendments that were being drafted or had been drafted. So we will not be doing a work session on Senate Bill 190. It will be set over until next week. I need to speak and work with counsel to make certain that we have everything in order as required. But apparently, there is a conflict right now, so that bill will not be heard today. Senator Walker's here, and I think we've got enough people. I'll go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 670. And counsel, why don't you bring us up to speed on 670?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 670, we heard on April 5th, and it requires the Director of Consumer and Business Services to prescribe treatment standards by rule for treatment of injured workers in managed care organizations and require that physicians be allowed to act as advocates for injured workers on medical services and temporary disability benefits issues. We have two amendments. The Dash 1 amendment allows a physician to advocate for medical service and temporary disability benefits only to the extent that they are supported by the medical record. And the Dash 2 amendment requires the director of DCBS to review and approve treatment standards instead of prescribed by rule treatment standards. We had no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay, just for my clarification, when we had this public hearing, we had some opposition to some of the language that was being proposed for the amendments to the existing law. As counsel stated, Dash 1 deals with the language that we found on page 3. The Dash 2 is on page 1. And I believe, Senator Walker, do you want to go ahead and just step up? My understanding is that she has worked through getting the amendments that have been requested by different people to make sure we have clarity. And if you want to give us a general report, that'd be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7, and you are correct. I'm very easy to get along with, for the most part. And there were some concerns about the language on both the first page and page 3. So I'll take the Dash 1 amendment first. That's the language that is addressed on page 3, and that just simply adds benefits for the injured worker that are supported by the medical record. That was an agreement that I came to with Safe Corporation. They thought that was a good change. I agreed. And what was really interesting, Mr. Chair, is that they also took a look at the contract that brought me to bring this bill, and they had concerns about the language in the contract. And so the next time the contract is up for renewal, I believe that language will be addressed when they bring that contract forward. The Dash 2 amendment comes from Drew Hagedorn and the folks he represent, Oregon Health Systems, and I think one other that came to me earlier this week, and that would simply delete the language that says that the director shall prescribe by rule and instead put in reviewed and approved by the director. It makes it more clear, it makes them more comfortable. I'm okay. I just want to make sure that what we have here is the same level of benefits for injured workers, both inside and outside of a managed care plan.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Walker? Senator.
I'm sorry, I missed the earlier hearing on this, but the bottom line is that right now physicians may not have the opportunity to advocate in some sort of dispute.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ringo, that's correct, but there was a lot of discussion both in committee and with legislative counsel and with the parties about what that exactly that means. There was discomfort with the terminology temporary disability benefits, but we clarified with legislative counsel and with Safe Corporation that temporary disability benefits simply means time loss, and that's all. There is concern by insurance companies that you get doctors that are advocating in more of a lawyer role about what benefits are available to a client outside of what supports the medical record. So that's why we have that language.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other questions from the Senator? Chair is willing to take motions on the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s.
Chair, I've made before you
do that, I guess. I'm just looking. I don't recall MLAC having looked at this bill, and I don't know if they did, if what their opinion was on the bill. And I've just been curious. I see Mr. Schultz in the back of the room, and so is J.L. Wilson. One of them could give us whether or not MLAC has looked at the bill yet or not.
Mr. Schultz looks like he drew the short straw here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Beyer, I was just looking at my notes myself to check that same question. And MLAC did not hear this because they haven't seen the amendments yet. So they haven't heard the bill yet.
But let me ask you, did they look at it prior to the amendments?
My notes don't say that, so I don't believe
getting
so.
Getting a nod in the back, it looks like maybe they did.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I don't.
Mr. Davey, why don't you come on up?
I feel the nod behind my head, yeah. Mr. Chair. It's a little strange.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Chris Davey with Safe Corporation. My recollection is that at the last MLAC meeting, this bill was discussed, and I came forward and mentioned the Dash-1 amendment that I had already discussed with Senator Walker and seemed to be appropriate. But I don't recall whether MLAC actually took a vote. I thought they did, but I'm not sure.
Okay. But at least they've been made aware, at least to the one
yes.
that I'm going to say is probably, quote unquote, more controversial as to the two amendments, because the other one appears to be just prescribing or clarifying what has been the practice of the agency. So,
and Mr. Chair, I can, in a few minutes, verify what MLAC's position is on this, if you need that.
Senator, first before Senator Walker, Senator Beyer, does that give you any clarity, or is it still
well,
muddy?
Well, Mr. Chair, it's muddy, and I'll say quite clearly, I don't think the bill, I didn't like the first bill. The bill as it's amended, I don't think really does anything different than what we've got today. Having said that, if MLAC has approved the bill, I will support it with the amendments. If they have not, I will not. So.
All right. And Senator Walker, you look like you wanted to say something, but we do see there is another representative from MLAC, and I don't want to put him on the spot, but JL, I would like for you to just come up and just let us know what the procedure is or what you remember regarding 670, so we can just put stuff on the record and we can move from there.
Thank you, Chair Przanski and members. For the record, J.L. Wilson representing the Management Labor Committee. We did hear 670. We did not take a position because it was our understanding that there would be amendments that both parties would be supportive of. We could take it back. I have no doubt that we would support the bill.
Okay. Senator Walker, did you want to add something?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say that I suspect that if Safe Corporation and the insurance companies supported the bill, that MLAC would most likely support it. And I was correct in my assessment. Thank you.
I've certainly heard enough to support this bill with the amendments.
So why don't we do this? I think I'm going to go ahead and, because of the timing that we're in, let's go ahead and move the amendments if we have the votes for them. And then I'm going to ask that if we could get some type of word back, or maybe Senator Beyer will get word to you as to if MLAC looks at this. Is MLAC still meeting on a weekly basis? Next Thursday? Okay. And
Mr. Chair, I won't object to moving the two amendments in the bill, but I will object to the bill and pending a decision, I guess.
Okay. So, is there a motion on Dash 1?
I move the Dash 1, Mr. Chair, in Senate Bill 670.
Senator Beyer moves the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 670. Is there any further discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, I move the Dash 2s in the Senate Bill 670.
Senator Beyer now moves the Dash 2s in the Senate Bill 670. Is there any further discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 670 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Ringo moves Senate Bill 670 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objection?
Yes.
All right. We have one. And Senator, so if the record will reflect that Senator Beyer objects and the rest of us are yeses, and if anyone wants to clarify that before I hit the gavel, we so ordered. and it will pass to the floor with a do pass recommendation with one objection. And we'll go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 670. And a carrier for this one. Senator Beyer probably doesn't want it until next Thursday.
I'll carry that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick will carry 670. And what we'll do is the last bill that we're going to hear today is Senate Bill 644, open work session on 644. And Council, please bring us up to speed on 644.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 644 excludes leave taken by an employee because of a job-related injury from the definition of family leave. We heard this on April 5th, and it has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. And is there anything that we need to consider in the way of amendments?
There are no amendments to this bill.
So the chair is willing to entertain a motion regarding Chair? Senate Bill 644. Yes, Senator Ringo.
I move Senate Bill 644 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Ringo moves Senate Bill 644 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, I can't support the bill. Your testimony and we've heard a lot of what ifs and maybes, and maybe this could happen and that might happen someday, but we heard no data to show that we have a problem. So I think it's a solution looking for a problem.
Just 190. Okay. And Senator Wissett, did you want to put anything on the record or just do the vote?
I would echo what Senator Beyer says on this particular bill. It seems that, as an employer, employees have to work sometime, and I say we just seem like we're putting more and more layer of regulation on employees that seem to me inappropriate in this position.
Okay. Karen, if you'd be so kind to go ahead and call the roll.
Senator
Ringo?
Aye.
Senator
Burdick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
No.
Chair
Prasansky? Aye. Senate Bill 644 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Ringo said he'll be willing to carry, so he'll be our carrier. And for members who came in late, we set over Senate Bill 190 to next week. We haven't actually set the time for posting, but I assume that will be Thursday based on the timing that we have today and because there are a conflict in the amendments. Ringo will be on 644. And with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn the Senate Commerce Committee for today. Thank you.